All right, Alan. Favorite bomber of World War II?
Which theater? Which country?
False.
You know, you have
B-17.
Soviets. Soviets. But the British had a couple of good ones. The B-29 nuked Japan.
False.
B-25.
Oh my God.
You know, Mitchell.
I knew I shouldn't have started with you.
B-24
All right.
For Liberty.
We're moving on.
Right, anyway.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Sons of History podcast. I'm Dustin Bass.
And I'm Alan Joaquin.
That's right. And World's Fair. I don't know where that was going to come from. I don't know why I was going to say welcome to the World's Fair. But I like to think that this is almost like the World's History Fair.
Are we the fairest podcast show just right to...
Yeah, we're fair.
Funny. We're fair. Are we too funny? Are we too mushy? Too...
I don't know. I remember, the other day, somebody... Do you ever read the YouTube comments that we get sometimes? Just the trolls? We get some trolls sometimes?
Well, I saw one where I could make a lot of money if I went to this one website. I thought of doing it, but, you know, because God knows it's more than we're getting paid here.
Hey, ain't that the truth.
But I saw the one where someone said I was a white supremacist or something, and I'm like going...
Yeah.
I'm not even an Anglo.
Exactly. Oh, the world we live in. Yeah. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, enough with YouTube comments. Leave them if you don't mind. We're not big fans of trolls, but whatever. I'll respond to them every once in a while.
We're good at ignoring the trolls. Yeah. I just don't even bother.
No, I ignore them most of the time, but sometimes I'm like, I got something for you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, if you are listening to this on the podcast, be sure to subscribe and then leave a rating and review. That'd be great. Also, tell your friends about the show if they really want to know about things history related. Gosh, I mean, this would be a good time to know about what's going on in the world now and then what has happened previous. But speaking of previous, what do you think about discussing this week in history?
I think that'd be a great idea for this moment in time, maybe. All right, I am going to start first. Okay, March...
And I'm timing you. Your time's already started.
March 17, 1776, the British occupation, military British occupation of Boston is over in 1776. Now, how did it happen? Concord and Lexington, or Lexington and Concord, you know, the Patriots were, like, attacking... You know, they were attacked first, and then they ran back to Boston, and they were under siege. So that lasted for a while. George Washington, you know, I really wish you wouldn't do that.
Like Steven Seagal under siege.
Yes, something like that. Okay, so I'm gonna make sure.
Stick to your notes.
I'm gonna make sure that because last time I messed up. Okay, so the England militias begin the siege of Boston after the events of Concord and Lexington and Concord. George Washington shows up to take command. Now, on May the 10th, you had a couple things happen around that time, but you had the Second Continental Congress. But at Fort Ticonderoga, you had Ethan Allen and Benedict Arnold. They captured Fort Ticonderoga. Now, that's important because when the siege progressed, George Washington needed artillery. So he sent Henry Knox to Fort Ticonderoga to go get the cannon. There were a lot of artillery that were sitting at Fort Ticonderoga so that they could use them against the British in Boston.
Yeah, they weren't going to use them on themselves.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, because they didn't make artillery. We had to get them from Europe. Mm-hmm. So Henry Knox goes to Fort Ticonderoga. He gets there, and on November the 17th, he begins what's called the Noble Train of Artillery.
You're not going to make it.
It's a 300-mile trek from Fort Ticonderoga to Boston. Started off with 60 pieces of artillery. They did lose one, but they got to Boston with 59 pieces. So now what happened was that in March there were some artillery duels. Washington did this on purpose.
I'll give you 15 more seconds.
Okay, whatever. March the 4th. Like 2,000 men started out for an area called Dorchester Heights. Now, there was a lot of artillery to cover the noise, but what happened was They marched into the Continental Army. They marched into Dorchester Heights. And overnight, they built all these fortifications. Mm-hmm. So when William Howe was the general at that time, the commanding general, when he saw the Dorchester Heights covered with American soldiers and all these little fortresses and redoubts and all that, he just kind of gasped and said, "My God, these fellows have done more work in one night than I could make my army do in 3 months." And he did try to get them out of there, but there was a blizzard, so it messed up his plans. Mm-hmm. But finally he said, you know, there's no way the artillery could devastate him, his navy, Boston. So on March the 17th, the last ship finally left. Boston was finally evacuated, and the long military occupation since 1768 was finally over. One bad thing that did happen during the, well, there were a lot, but the one big one that was bad was the Liberty Tree, the famous Liberty Tree, yeah, was cut down in August.
Jerks.
So of, you know, 1775. So that, yeah, was kind of BS, but yeah, it was a tree. We're the tree huggers.
Exactly.
You know?
Just staring at the tree.
Yeah. Very so, weird. All right, so 3.5 minutes. Not bad.
Not too bad. Just twice as long as, you know, but whatever. Hey, not too bad.
Yeah, it's a good story, you know?
It's a great story. Yeah. Yes. All right, so mine is, have you read Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar?
I did. Yeah. I did. In
the
high school.
Ides of March. Yes, in right. High school. Yeah, the Ides of March.
To Bruno.
Yeah, thank you. Don't ruin it.
Was it Bruno?
We don't talk about Bruno.
Buddha. That's an anthem.
That's right. All right, so my This Week in History is March 15th, 44 BC. The Ides of March, as illustrated in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. And yeah, if you've never read that, it's really good. Anyways, Julius Caesar is assassinated in Rome in the Senate chambers. And
he was
with a bunch of knives.
Stabbed
countless times.
That's
not cool. He tries to defend himself from these guys because it's really like pretty grotesque, like how brutal it was. Like they were like started just, these were senators, so obviously not men of like, not soldiers, like not a lot of them were soldiers, so they don't real used to stabbing. Mm-hmm. So they're like stabbing and like barely stabbing. Like, dude, if you're gonna stab, really get in there, get in deep, right?
Yeah, soldiers knew where to kill someone with
exactly
one.
So while he's defending himself, the famous line, Julius Caesar turns and looks at Brutus and says, "Et tu, Brute?" You too, Brutus, or also known as, you know, commonly, "You too, my child," because they were very close. Well, the ultimate betrayal, right? It's like we talked about Benedict Arnold, we mentioned Judas Iscariot. Brutus, right up there with them. So Caesar dies, and Rome becomes a republic again. Sort of.
Briefly.
Like, briefly. And
that's
then,
a big civil war there.
Yeah. Pompey.
He had a second triumvirate.
Caesar. Yeah.
You had Mark Antony. What?
Guy.
Hmm?
I can't remember his name. But anyways,
well,
no, great, great story.
Octavius, who ends up becoming Augustus.
Caesar Augustus, yeah. So, great story. And if you've not read at least Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare, I highly encourage you to do that. But that is it, ladies and gentlemen, for This Week in History. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, we've got Charles E. Stanley Jr. on the line. Charles E. Stanley is the author of Lost Airmen, the epic rescue of World War II U.S. bomber crew stranded behind enemy lines. I thoroughly enjoyed this book, and I know that you are really going to enjoy the conversation. Are you ready, Doctor?
I am ready, Doctor.
He is always ready, even when he's not. All right, Chuck, thanks for being on the Sons of History podcast. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Fantastic.
How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Totally. Yeah, right?
Except when Madison jumped on me while I was carrying the coffee, but, you know.
I really can't believe that you would even attempt carrying two cups of coffee at the same time.
Why not? I carry two mugs of beer. With this dog. I carry two mugs of beer at the same time.
With a dog jumping all over
you? Well, I don't hang out with
your dog. Exactly. Yeah. So, what is it? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? Yeah. I haven't gotten excellent, but that was, yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. Well, Chuck, hey, it's great having you on the show. Thanks for joining us. I really, really enjoyed the book. It's like with those first, like probably your first more than half of the chapters, you were going through the bomber crews, various bomber crews. And I think you cover about 13 bomber crews, B-17, B-24. What was, I guess, one, first off, how difficult was it to find all those sources, do all those interviews, or in particular, find all those people that were part of those bomber crews?
Well, the thing about the research was that I had to start from scratch because nobody's ever done this before. So, nobody's sort of devoted a book to the partisans' role in helping U.S. airmen during World War II. There are some that touch on it. There are a couple about particularly Slovene partisans, but nobody really did anything like I've just done. And yeah, I did start with researching the airmen because I had a pretty demanding full-time job at the time. And I knew I probably couldn't finish the book quickly enough that these guys, a lot of these guys I knew probably wouldn't still be alive when I finished it. So the trick was to get as many interviews in as I could before they passed away. And in fact, the real wake up call, when you read the book, you learn about Herman Marone, who's one of my favorite characters in there. In fact, he has more mentions in there than any other character except for my father. And I called him, talked to him on the telephone, was going to drive to see him. And before I could, his daughter called me and told me he had passed away. So that really got me moving. And I did a lot of interviews right after that.
Absolutely. And they're, you know, obviously they're mentioned in the book throughout, but at the end you have them named with their crews, which is very cool to have them all named and labeled with their particular crews.
So, yeah, the book is really an anthology of the stories of the crews strung together by the fact that they all ended up in the same place in modern Bosnia, a place called Sanski Most.
Right. Now, this was, I guess, a historical situation that you were not thrown into, but your dad was, he's a major part of this book. And so his story, obviously, you grew up with. So how did that influence you to say, not only am I going to repeat these stories and tell people about them, but I'm actually going to write a book about them?
Well, the interesting thing to me was my father was shot down twice, and growing up, I heard more about the first time he was shot down than the second time. The first time he was shot down, he bailed out over Romania and had some interesting adventures there, ended up in Bucharest and with the Russians and made it back. But once I started the research, I didn't realize that that the main adventure was in Yugoslavia. And so it was a process of discovery for me and also for my father. And in fact, I think the highest compliment my father ever gave me was at one point he said to me, you know more about me than I do. And I kind of did because I had done all the research on it and had all the background that he didn't.
So your dad, Charles E. Stanley Sr., he was shot down twice, as you just mentioned, and you discuss a lot about the planes going down or being shot down, and these bomber crews getting back in the planes and going back on missions. How did they deal with the stress of getting back in the plane or getting in the plane, period, and dealing with those missions?
Well, that, again, that was another interesting facet of my research. And there are books out there that pretty extensively cover the stresses that the airmen went through. And so I not only had, what I always try to do is mix the academic with the practical and the hands-on knowledge that I gained from the interviewees. So you know, I read everything I could on the subject, but I also gained insights from the airmen themselves. And just like any other human endeavor, some of them just dealt with the stress better than others did. And a lot of it had to do with how long they were at it. You know, the longer you were at it, the worse it got. And the sort of catchphrase that even the Army Air Forces had at the time was that courage is like money. You know, you basically spend some every mission. And that's why they set up rest camps for these guys, because they knew they had to periodically get a break, or any of them could have cracked.
Yeah. Now, speaking of cracking, we've got in the book, you obviously your dad was shot down twice. And I think a lot of people, when they think of the bombers going down, they're thinking shot down. But right. You also address a lot of the mechanical failures that took place in these planes. So aside from enemy fire, how risky was flying the planes with what all could go wrong with them?
Yeah, the thing that I try to impart to the readers is that what they were doing was inherently dangerous to begin with, much before they were even shot at. There were thousands of men killed in training accidents, but before they even went overseas. And then you go up in an airplane, a non-pressurized airplane, at oxygen level is about 12,000 feet. Once you're above 12,000 feet, you want to be on oxygen. And these guys were flying at least 25, 26,000 feet, and sometimes went up to 31,000 feet. So they were dealing with oxygen masks, 30 degree below zero temperatures, open windows, so the air is blowing through, and then people are shooting at you. So what these guys went through was formidable to start with. And the other thing I'd like to mention is that somewhere in the book, I contrast the dangers of being in the ground war with being in the air war. And the fact is that, not to take anything away from anybody in the ground war, but the dangers of being in the air were psychologically unique, because the range of danger was 360 degrees. At any time, at any moment, when you're in a field of flak, one of those pieces of shrapnel could come through the thin skin of that aircraft and wound or maim you or kill you, and there was nothing you could do about it. There was no evasive action, that no amount of body armor that you wore could save you. And either one of those things had your name on it or it didn't. And I, at least on the ground, you could shoot back, you could take cover, you know, in artillery, you were pretty helpless, but you could hit the dirt or dig a foxhole or something. Up there, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. So, and I think that was really stressful to a lot of the guys.
You know, one of the most interesting stories about World War II is in regards to the civil war that took place in Yugoslavia. And it's interesting that, you know, your story takes place there also. You know, I mentioned earlier to you before the show, this movie, Force 10 from Navarone, was what introduced me as a child to the Yugoslav Civil War. Now everyone knows the Partisans was led by Marshal Tito, or Marshal Joseph Tito, and he became the president of Yugoslavia for many years. But there was another group, the Chetniks, and I know I'm going to butcher his name, but here we go, Dragoljub Mihailović.
Mihailovic, yeah.
Mihailovic?
I probably butcher it too, but yes. Well, Draža Mihailovic.
Yeah, so, I mean, hey, if they're not American sounding, then, you know, I don't want to hear it. He needs to change his name.
Change it, jerk.
Yeah, oh, funny gosh. That a Joaquin would say that. Anyway, so, so how pivotal were the story with the Chetniks and the Partisans and, you know, where the American survival comes in?
Well, the Chetniks were the remnant of the Yugoslavian army that had been destroyed by the Germans soon after they invaded the country in 1941. And certain of them, including Mihailovic was a colonel at the time. And, you know, some of them refused to surrender and went into the woods and formed an underground movement. And so for a time, the Chetniks and Mihailovic as their leader became basically the face of all the underground movements in Europe. And the British tried to sell them as an important force, probably oversold them as a fighting force. But they were mostly they were old army officers, and they were ethnically usually Serbian, which was the largest ethnic group in the old Yugoslavia, but certainly not the only one.
So now, when it comes to the Chetniks and the Partisans, you discuss a lot. It's typically the Partisans that find, at least in your book, that find the Americans, and you put the stories into like their camps, into their villages, and how life was like with them. Pretty rough scrabble, to put it mildly. But how pivotal were they to protecting the Americans and making sure that they were able to get back to base?
Well, I tried to give a little background in the Chetnik versus partisan struggle. As time went on, the partisans became the stronger force. There was a Chetnik partisan civil war happening in the middle of war. There were wars within wars going on here, so that it wasn't just the Allies versus the Axis. There were civil wars going on, I can't say between, among several factions, including the Croatian Ustashi, Muslim militia, and the Chetniks and the Partisans, while everything else is happening. So there are places in World War II where there are heavier casualties, but there really is no other place in Europe anyway where the fighting was so layered, and where basically there's attempted genocide going on at several levels just everywhere. But by the time my father and the guys that I write about show up in Yugoslavia, the partisans were pretty much winning their civil war against the Chetniks. And they controlled a much greater part of the country than the Chetniks did. And that's why most of my guys end up with Chetniks. Most of them end up with partisans. Some of them end up with Chetniks. And although there's some pretty interesting stories about the guys who ended up with the Chetniks, a group of the guys that I write about are with the Chetniks to the bitter end of the war, and we're the last outsiders to see Mihailovic alive.
Yeah,
you got quite a bit of endorsements regarding your book, and are you going to be writing any more about the war itself, or any other stories coming up that our listeners?
Well, I'll see how it goes. What I have in mind to, as the next book. Is actually, I was when I said I was a I had a pretty busy professional life, and that's why I couldn't get to this book. I was a pretty high level official in New York State, and I was actually working for the governor's office while I was doing a lot of this research, and and about 2001, a little thing called 9/11 happened, and I was part of the team that that coordinated New York State's response to 9/11. And actually, it happens that I, being historically minded, I kept all the files that crossed my desk during New York State's response to 9/11. And I've checked around with all my old colleagues and the State Emergency Management Office and the State Archives. And the fact is, I'm the only one who kept them. So I sort of have a monopoly on the information. And so I sort of feel obligated to make that my next effort.
Well, very cool. I think that would be, it'd be something, especially with a lot of the mistakes governors are making nowadays in regards to other events.
Yeah,
I don't want to make this political.
I've not seen any mistakes being made. Now, last question. I know that that is not your dry cleaning behind you. You talk about your mother and your father's relationship. They get married, sort of early into the book. So what's hanging behind you?
Well, there are a lot of good stories in the book, but the one that seems to really grab people's attention is the fact that the second time my father was shot down, he carried his parachute across Yugoslavia, and that's what helped him or helped prevent him from freezing to death along the way. And he used to joke that he got shot down the first time, and my mother had expected him to bring the dress back, and he didn't, so he had to go get shot down again. So, I mean, the parachute back, because she wanted to make her wedding dress out of it. They were engaged. And so the second time he did. And this thing behind me is what I call the parachute wedding dress. And that is the remnant of my father's parachute that my mother was married in soon after the war.
Well, Chuck, it's a fantastic book, Ladies Lost Airmen. It's out March 15th. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, March 15th. It is out wherever books are sold. And I will tell you, from after reading it, it's a very fun book. It's historical, yes, but it's very fun. Chuck does a fantastic job of introducing you almost to brand new stories in those first 12 to 15 chapters of these bomber crews, and then they all sort of come together to try to get the hell out of harm's way, and then get back to base in order to get back into harm's way. So, Chuck, thank you again for joining us on the Sons of History podcast. It's been great talking to you.
My pleasure.
Well, that was a really fun conversation. Really glad to have. Okay, let me ask you, Professor, what is with the glasses, like, on and off, and just either on or off?
I only wear these because I have to. I don't like them. What is it? Your dog attacks me when I'm holding coffee, before the interview.
And I attack you when you're holding glasses.
Yeah, I know where she gets it from.
I have to. Enough. All right, I want to get back to the conversation. I can't believe how much you just threw me off.
You know, if I was a better actor, I'd be more convincing.
Yeah, but you're not. Neither am I. All right. That was fun. I really enjoyed the conversation. What did you think about our conversation with Chuck and the whole like just that scares the crap out of me. Like he was talking about, like, it's a unique experience being in the plane. The dangers are unique. Mm-hmm. Like freaking getting shot out of the sky and then just falling 20,000 feet.
I've had some pretty harrowing experiences. I was on a flight from Boston to Frankfurt. Hold on. It was on our way to Germany.
Were you shot down?
Yeah. Well, no. But one of the doors kind of, it didn't completely fly off, but it kind of partially opened, and we had to make an emergency.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. True story.
Were you like, I'm sorry, I thought we had already landed.
First transatlantic flight.
Really?
First, yeah, it was back in 75 or 76 when that happened. Leaving Logan Airport, we were on a
Pan Am?
Lufthansa 747.
Luftwaffe?
Lufthansa. Hansa.
Golly. Yeah. That'd be pretty creepy.
But yeah, it was pretty creepy. And then there was another time, Philadelphia, but that was something else.
Well, it's that, and then also being like in the Navy, and your ship goes down. It's like, well,
but see, we weren't being shot down at
20,000 leagues under the sea.
Something now. Yeah. So you can imagine people who are petrified just getting on a plane, but you're getting on a plane and you're getting shot at. I mean, they're trying to shoot you down. That's you know,
and we really take for granted to an extent. Like, one, this is what 75 plus years ago. These bombers that these guys were in, so not the most reliable as we discuss. Like now, we jump in the air and we don't even want to feel the bump.
You know, back in those days, thousands upon thousands of our military guys were getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every month. Now, I mean, how many years did it take to get to, let's say, 1,000 deaths, say, in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I don't know about Iraq, like, but
very different war.
Yeah. Obviously. But I mean, you know, like you'd have 2,000-3,000 people getting killed in one day.
Yeah.
Maybe even more, depending on the battle. And so
crazy. You know. So, well, ladies and gentlemen, really encourage you to go get the book. And speaking of books, book and movie recommendation.
All right. So I think it's going to be unanimous in terms of The Lost Airman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fascinating book.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun to read. It really is fun to read.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that I did mention to him was the fact that, you know, in all the, I don't want to say in theaters, because this is obviously the European theater of operations, but, you know, there were little mini wars all over the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular area, Yugoslavia, you had a civil war going on. Now, I did mention it to him, and this leads into my movie. So I'm gonna kind of tie them in together. But when I was, junior high, I think, I'll tell you this, I was too young to watch it. Because
sort of like I was too young to watch Delta Force with Chuck Norris.
Well, no. In this one,
I was like in kindergarten.
Okay, in this Force 10 from Navarone, and I'll explain why in a second. Force 10 from Navarone. I was about 13 years old, 14 when this came on HBO, and it's a good movie. It's got Robert Shaw, Harrison Ford, that Richard Kiel guy.
It's freaking Edward rated Fox. PG. What are you talking about?
Well, there's a scene where Barbara Bach is in a bathtub. And she gets out, and yes, she's naked.
Really?
Yeah. Now, normally, you know.
Yeah, PG.
Right. But the problem was mom was there. God forbid I see a naked woman.
At
13. Well, I mean, come on. I'm coming of age, you know.
When she started flipping out? Never mind.
Yeah, she flipped out.
Never mind.
And that was one of the reasons why they got rid of HBO. They said, no more, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was thanks to this movie, but it's still worth it. I mean, it was worth it.
You know? Barbara Bach.
But, yeah, I mean, come on. That's Ringo Starr's wife, if they're still married. Yeah. I was like, Mom, come on. It's the Beatles. You know?
Then she those are not Beatles.
Well, no. Then she starts saying, those hippies or whatever, they're the reason why we have all the hippies in this country with the long hair. And anyway, so, okay. Yeah. So this movie, Force 10 from Navarone, it's a good way to introduce you to the Chetniks versus the Partisans, but they really make the Chetniks look bad in this movie.
Way to introduce you to naked women. So.
Yeah, Barbara Bach. Anyway, so if you're gonna read this, remember this, because it'll, you know, hey, Chetniks and Partisans. Oh, yeah, I remember that from Force 10 and Navarone, and when you read this book, you'll be more familiar with it.
There you go. Yes, Lost Airman, recommended reading. Like I said, it is out March 15th. Yeah, beautiful. That's this week, so perfect. Now, my movie recommendation, I mentioned Julius Caesar's assassination. Julius Caesar with Marlon Brando and James Mason and Deborah Kerr. Marlon Brando, amazing.
I didn't realize they made a movie about the I'll have to watch that.
You'll have to watch it. One of the
Marlon
classics.
Brando, huh? When was
Marlon Brando?
When was
he
this?
He is Mark Antony.
Marlon Brando is?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, you know, there's was it that movie Cleopatra that has Rex Reed or something
and like that? Liz Taylor.
Yeah, and Anthony Burton playing Mark Antony. That was actually a pretty good movie. I liked it. It was long.
Yeah.
You know, that bankrupted the 20th century.
I was going to say, it was like the most expensive movie ever made, right?
At the time, yeah. I think the Longest Day saved them, I think. I think. I don't know. One is, there was a movie that saved 20th Century Fox.
Yeah. Well,
but yeah, that movie just, I mean, the cost, great movie, but yeah, the cost was pretty
unbelievable. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that brings us to an end of the episode. You can find us on many platforms. What are they, Alan?
Well, there's Facebook. Be sure to like us. There is Instagram. Be sure to follow us. There is YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to us. And then we're on Rumble and some others that you do on there. And then we have our own website, www.thesonsofhistory.com, where you can also get some of our great merchandise.
That's right. Coffee mugs, t-shirts, and whatnot. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that's it. We hope that you had a great time watching or listening to the show. We will talk to you next week.